Welcome to the Smashy Business Show, everyone. Good morning. I am Wadid Ahmed.
And I'm Abdul Majid.
And it is the 20th of January today. It's a Monday. We're starting off strong. How are you doing today, Majid?
I'm good. Finally, after a long time, I've had the two weekend days at home, slept, relaxed. So yeah, very energetic.
That long sigh.
Finally. After I don't know when, like 1 million years, finally.
I get exactly how you feel.
It was a very busy weekend, that's why.
Really? What did you do?
No, I didn't do anything. Thankfully, I was at home. But news-wise, every second something was happening. Like, this is happening. Trump is launching a coin. This is happening. The world is two big billionaires of Dubai are fighting. It's so much. And then following the Gaza thing, half an hour, 1 hour, they're like, okay, it's happening. Okay, it's not happening. It'll happen Sunday in the morning. Mm. Then the Israeli PM, he came and he was like, okay, till we don't get a list of the people, we're not doing it. Mm. So it was very busy
in terms of news.
So every half an hour, I was like, this happened. Oh, now this. So yeah, that way it was very busy. But yeah, relaxing, chilling at home.
Yeah, but speaking of all things busy going on, let me actually tell you what happened between Khalaf al-Habtour and Muhammad al-Abbar. So essentially what happened is that Muhammad al-Abbar went on to a forum to basically say that meetings are useless. You know, meetings don't actually create results. And what he called it in Arabic was kharbata. It's all kharbata. You don't actually learn anything. And the response that he got, we saw the response that he got. And in fact, Khalaf al-Habtour, the founder and CEO of the Habtour Group, actually responded and said that he was wrong. And what was even more interesting about the entire thing was the fact that he did not just come with a statement. He came with evidence. He said that, Muhammad al-Abbar, you actually went on to admit that your business lost about $1.4 billion.
In the U.S.
And that's crazy because Ihmar Properties in itself, which Muhammad al-Abbar founded and is the head of, its entire business is actually valued at over $8 billion. Yeah. So he said that it was a big loss for you. And if this loss, he said, quote-unquote, Majid, if this loss was made today, that's bad.
Yeah.
But if this loss was something that you had 10 years ago, that's even worse because the value was more then. But it was just so entertaining to see because they're both responding to each other. They're both keeping up with each other.
No, al-Abbar hasn't responded yet. I'm waiting for his response. Because what happened was the 1.4 billion thing, you remember we did this 1 billion follower summit video where he was talking to the guy and he talked about, first of all, that marketing is a gimmick, it's a propaganda.
Marketing is a propaganda.
In that part, in that event, he basically said that I lost some money. It said 1.4 billion in the U.S., because the person who was interviewing us, he follows us on Smashy Business. Thank you for that. He said basically that, what about the losses that you face in US? And he said, it was around 1.4 billion. So that is one part. Then he went on to the International Project Management Forum, and where he said the meeting part. So Khalaf al-Habtour, like, he's keeping an eye on where he's going, what he's saying. And trust me, it's to be honest, for me, it's a very good dialogue that they've started. For me, it's less a clash of like two billionaires, which everyone is touting it to be, but it's more a clash of ideologies. And always these clashes, they happen. See, we always saw Bill Gates versus Steve Jobs in the Western world. We've seen some big, Mike Tyson versus Muhammad Ali. We've seen some big fights in every arena. And this is not a fight. This is a discussion, to be honest. It's actually a thesis on what meetings are important and what meetings are not important, how long they should be. So at the end, the result will be a great, like, a manuscript for people to follow. Mr. Habtour's meetings, where he says he starts at 7:30, the very first meeting, quickly ends it, just takes the highlights. Al-Abbar saying, no meaning to them. useless. Just decide what you want to do and do it.
But did you hear what he said, though? Mohammed Al-Abbar also said that when he's walking to the car, he discusses with his business partners what they're about to do.
So he's doing a meeting. It's like a mini version of a meeting. Like, he just meets them, asks them the update, and leaves. He just doesn't want to sit in the office and, like, take out time and sit and discuss. He discusses his on the way. So he is having meetings, but his form of meeting, his idea of meeting, is like just, oh, let's walk together. It's like, you remember you did the Sheikh Tanhoon story?
I know.
That if you want to meet that guy, you can't expect a cliche environment where he'll be sitting in a big chair and you'll be sitting in front.
And you'll be sitting on the opposite side. And
it'll always be with him cycling on something or going to the gym or doing some activity. So see, the idea of meeting, the main core of the meeting, the essence of the meeting is still there in all these places. It's just that how you do it. So it's just about the how that they're discussing. For Mr. Abtur, I think he believes that a room, proper people sitting, the idea of a former, like a conventional meeting room, he wants that. Mr. Al-Abbar, he's like, okay, I'm walking, I'm going there. Just join me in the car, we'll discuss it. So it's the how
they're debating, not what. I do, to be honest with you, you know, you're saying that it's the how that they're debating. Yeah. It's not actually the what.
Yeah.
But if you really hear Mohammed Al-Abbar, what he was actually saying, he was saying like, yani, ana batahaddakum, like I challenge all of you.
Yeah.
No, so he's listen, he is really firm on this belief that like meetings they're useless. But the way that I honestly think about a meeting is that, okay, if we're like, say we're like doing a meeting that's like just, it's a meeting that's actually scheduled and it's scheduled to happen, I don't know, say every single Wednesday. This is like a reoccurring meeting on the calendar. I believe something like that may not be useful because sometimes we don't actually have something to discuss every week. We're aligned. We're, you know, we're already looped in with everything. But I feel like meetings are useful for like, you know, one example, like, you know, we come in every single day, we're writers, you know, we do our carousels. It's good to set up a meeting when you know that somebody's literally busy every single minute of the day. So you setting up that meeting with them, that 20 minutes, that 10 minutes, whatever it is, it actually forces them to just have a conversation with you. I see meetings as conversations that people don't have time to make with you. No, really, that's what I see a meeting as. Like, you know, you don't have time to have a conversation with somebody, so that person will put you on the spot by scheduling a meeting with you. And then you can have that conversation without feeling stressed of, there's a task that's meant to go out right now. Because, I'm in a meeting, and it's a meeting that we professionally scheduled. So that's, I see both perspectives.
Yeah.
I see Khalaf Al-Habtour's perspective in the fact of, you know, every morning at 7 a.m., the way you said, he sits with his closest advisors, and they plot and they scheme, is a way that I would like to put it. And then Mohammed Al-Abbar, I just think because of the fact that he anyways makes time probably to have those conversations with his employees, with his advisors, with his partners, he does not feel the need to make a meeting.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened here.
If you look at it closely, what we do in the morning, the show, this is also a meeting. We go live, a lot of people every day, people know that we come live. Someday they'll miss it, they'll listen to it afterwards. So minutes of the meeting go out in the form of recorded show and everything. So meetings are important. That's my point of view. How you do it, that depends on your ideology. To be honest, this is not a fight, not a debate in the like negative sense. It's a very good conversation that has been started, and I would love Al-Abbar to like reply to Mr. Al-Abtur. It'll be a great conversation. It'll be a platonic debate where both parties are there to learn something. So it's not like a normal debate where you see one candidate, in the next story that we're going to talk about, Trump, the presidential candidate that he's debating to win and become a president. This debate is more and should be more towards the platonic, the Aristotelian idea of debate, that we sit together and we discuss our opposing ideas to learn from each other, not to win. So this is going to become that one thing. But people are taking sides, so yeah, let's see who is. It's mostly the employees that are not in favor of meetings.
You know what it
is? Even the comments that you see, it's mostly the people who are working for someone. They're like, let us do the work. Don't pull us into meetings. Mm. But I think short meetings are good. 10-minute, 15-minute brainstorming meetings. Just do it. Quickly wrap it up.
But you know, it's so funny. I truly do think people don't like meetings because just this morning, you know, one of my family members, they were complaining to me about out of nowhere.
Not doing meetings with them?
No, meetings. They said out of nowhere, their office had just scheduled meetings for every single day. And then, you know, they also told me, like, you know, the kind of business that we do, it's something that, you know, when we get results, they're big results. Yeah. But it's the results that come in slowly. So there's not actually anything to discuss and come and update on. And I just felt so bad. Because imagine you have to sit in that meeting every day and you got to tell everybody something. Yeah. I think meetings also create that pressure, by the way, of like, you know, what do I have to tell? What do I have to say?
Sometimes they also make you answerable. Answerable, because you know you have to report about the whole week on the end of Friday, or maybe you have a Monday meeting where you sit together, all of you, discuss the whole week, plan the whole week, or you do the Friday. There's like 100 million philosophies behind meetings. I prefer the Monday meeting where you plan everything for the week, and also a Friday small meeting before you leave. Well, we did this. This was good. This was not good. Let's come back on Monday and make sure these pointers that we learned from this week, we implement it in the next week. The good things and don't do the bad things. So yeah, short meetings, Monday and Friday is fine. In between, I also think that cramming meetings throughout the week is not fine. But some people see for example, a CEO of a company which has like 5,000 people, he can't keep updated with all the 5,000 people. So he needs the team leaders to come and report to him that this is going good and this is going bad. So you need them, you don't need them. You just need to find that delicate balance in between.
And I think, you know, Majid, I in particular, I have this very toxic trait where I like to assume that people know what's going on.
No, people don't. You have to update them.
No, really. I mean, I have this toxic trait where I genuinely assume that people know what I'm up to and they know what I'm doing and, like, the results are there and everyone's... I just assume that. So, for me,
you have to tell everyone everything. Trust me. Mm. It's the good part.
And
let's go to the next story because we have a guest today as well and we only have 5 minutes.
We do. For the next story today, TikTok is back in the U.S.
Yeah.
It was gone, but it's back.
Yeah. And the Arab world is having a field day because there's every social media is present. Everyone is present here, TikTok. And actually, you remember Mr. Hamdan, our crown prince of Dubai, he actually met the TikTok CEO.
Mm-hmm.
The FII thing happened.
He
did an interview in Saudi. And on his way back, he came to Dubai. He met them. So the good thing is Dubai and overall the UAE, they're very pro-social media and very pro all the technology companies being here, setting up here for the Middle Eastern
offices.
Even
just recently in Saudi Arabia, right at the end of 2024, in November, TikTok actually established a Majlis, a creators hub for Saudis, and they also opened their first new office.
That was Snapchat.
Snapchat. Sorry, my
bad. Snapchat.
I'm so sorry. That was Snapchat.
TikTok basically has plans to set up a regional headquarters in Saudi Arabia.
Yes, this year, I believe.
Yeah, that was the funny part that he, as soon as the TikTok CEO came from FII8 in Saudi Arabia, he met Dubai Crown Prince. It's a fight going on. It's competition between UAE and Saudi to keep the headquarters of every big giant in their city, in their country. So let's see who wins. It's a constructive fight.
And not just that, right? You know, Trump,
He's saying that as soon as he gets inaugurated, he'll issue an executive order. Right now, what he's done is he's posted that, according to me, it shouldn't be banned. And as soon as I come into power, I'll issue an executive order. So TikTok first decide, thank you, we're going. And then they release a statement that, we're coming back because after assurances from Mr. Trump, the incoming president, 45th president.
Just so that you all know, by the way, the founder and CEO of Damac Hills, Hussein Sejuani, right now is in the U.S., right as we speak, there to watch the inauguration of Donald Trump. And for a very good reason, too. Yeah. Just recently, we saw how Sejuani invested $20 billion into building data centers into the U.S. But back to the TikTok ban, yeah. Back to that topic. I think it's so interesting because the reaction from Americans. By the way, I knew this was going to happen. No, seriously, I knew that this was going to happen, Majid, because it's like, because in my mind, TikTok, by the way, they did not actually, the CEO of TikTok did not put up TikTok for sale. Yeah. It never went up for sale. So whoever was trying to buy it, Mr. Beast, Kevin O'Leary for $20 billion, yeah. TikTok was, they weren't going to give up their stakes. Why would they give that up just for America? That wasn't going to happen. Yeah. But so I knew in my mind that the only person who could make a difference in this entire story, it was going to be Donald Trump. Yeah. It was going to be Donald Trump. But what's so hilarious, Majid, is, oh my God, if you had seen TikTok, you know what people were doing? So this trend actually started that was like, I have something to tell everybody. It was that audio. I have something to tell everybody. And then the content creator would admit something that they were doing, you know, since we're leaving this app. You know what one girl said? I didn't actually do my workouts.
It just showed them.
Imagine, you know what her workouts were? She'd put the phone up and she'd be like, okay, I'm going to run 5 miles. And then she'd do she'd do some star jumps and then she'd put timing, she'd put sets, reps.
Spray water on her face, like
yeah.
Sweating.
And then, no, and she was wearing the entire workout fit, everything. And then she'd like do some squats and then she'd put some reps, sets. And that girl, I used to watch her, by the way, like since like 2019. And I always used to tell myself like, yo, you need to get like her. She's doing all this. She's running 5 miles. Only for her to tell all of us that she wasn't doing any of that. Do you know the stuff that they were admitting? They even threw a funeral party. Yeah, they were wearing black. Imagine this. And it's right back. It's right yeah. back here. But back to the Arab world. It's interesting because it's like, you know, some of, you know, my mom and her best friends, they were all saying like, you know, they should ban TikTok in the Arab world too. You know, you have people on that side of the debate that are saying, you know, it should be banned. It's the reason why more people are not chasing their dreams. They're uneducated because, you know, they're constantly on the app. You know, I would say that they have a point because my screen time is like a good 8 hours. And that's because I spend time on TikTok. But, and then you have other people who argued something even more interesting. They said that as we see how, you know, TikTok has been banned in the U.S., I know, for just a couple of hours, what it's actually showing us is that the Arab world is embracing the new world, it's embracing the new media more than the U.S.,
yeah.
more than the land of the free.
Free speech.
Which is so yeah. interesting. What do you think about that, Majid?
It's clear that they're not the land of free speech. It's very clear. Our country, to be honest, right now, UAE, Saudi, everyone is talking about them because they are adopting everything that's there to adopt. They don't want to be left behind. And U.S. is yeah. going towards a very regressive kind of philosophy, like don't do this, don't do this. They're just saying don't do this.
Yeah.
They're not saying, okay, we can do this. So let's see, hopefully, TikTok, what Trump said in his tweet was very scary for me because he said that 50-50. So he would want someone to own 50% of TikTok in the U.S. So let's see what executive order he pulls out. The main idea is that he will delay it, but then the conversation will restart on somehow TikTok selling 50% of their brand. The interesting bit was that G42 in 2023 bought into TikTok as well. I was just yesterday, it was all happening and I was like, okay, how much? $100
million.
They bought into their parent company, ByteDance, at a $20 billion evaluation. G42 was in ByteDance. And then they pulled out, they came in around 2023 mid, and they pulled out around 2024 March because again G42 needed.
They pulled out.
Yeah, they needed H100 chips from US Nvidia, so they got pressure that pull out all your investments from Chinese apps, whatever, and they had to pull out. So they sold the stake for nearly $150 million or something. So they made profit on it, but G42 was part of like an investor in ByteDance. Thankfully, they pulled out because TikTok went very bad. But now I think, let's see.
That's so interesting.
Fingers crossed for TikTok story. But, it continues. This is not the climax.
Of course it will continue. And I think the reason why it will continue is because, you know, I was even discussing this, with my family because I want to start, you know, publishing on social media. And I was like, okay, should I maybe make Instagram my home too, where the content I publish on TikTok, I also take it to Instagram and I take it to YouTube Shorts. But you know what it is? I don't feel comfortable doing it on Instagram because Instagram to me, it's all about aesthetics. Yeah. It's all about aesthetics. It's all about perfection. For me, TikTok is where I feel most comfortable because that's where I see everyone feels most comfortable expressing themselves. And yeah. I think that's a kind of environment, that's a kind of space that TikTok has created for itself. Yeah. And with that being said, coming up, we have Mr. Azhar Sajjan sharing his journey, the future of Casa Milano, and his insights into the luxury home industry. So tune in for that. And we're back. Today, we're sitting down with Mr. Azhar Sajjan, the director of Casa Milano. Under his leadership, Casa Milano has grown from a luxury sanitary ware and tiles brand into a one-stop destination for high-end home solutions. From designer kitchens to premium furnishings, Azhar will share how the brand has evolved and what's next. Thank you so much for being here today. How are you doing today?
Thank you guys for having me. It really is a pleasure to be on this show, and I appreciate the time.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you so much. And just to start, what we want to know is, tell us about Casa Milano. How did this idea all start? How did you found it?
So it started in 2018, where I was enjoying my summer. And I was also going to summer school at the same time. I was living with my uncle for a few days because my parents had traveled. So I was like, okay, this is the best summer of my life. I'm going to party. I'm going to enjoy my, workcation, whatever it was called. And one fine day, they were also building their house. They were deciding to do that. And this conversation came up that, he was not very happy with looking at whatever was available in the market, including his own stores, which was very funny to hear as well. And they were looking to seeing how to, there's an untapped market for this kind of a business. So that's how we got into Casa Milano. I said, okay, I'll do it. I was also in university at that time. I had just gotten out of probation, which is like, if you have a GPA below 2, you're about to be kicked out. So I had just gotten out of that. And I said, you know what, let's do this as well. It helps me grow up as well. And I wanted to understand what I would do after university, because I was always like, I want to do something cool. I want to do something different. I don't want to do what my family's already been, they've already established. So Casa Milano was something a little bit more different because we was targeting a niche audience. It was something very unique for the whole group as well simultaneously. And we opened our doors in 2019. I got to travel to a couple of countries to understand what type of products I want to source, what type of experience I want to bring out. And that's finally when October 2019, Casa Milano opened its doors, where we specialized in sanitary ware, tiles, kitchens, wardrobes, parquet flooring, and now ironmongery.
Wow.
So quite a bit of things. It's been in the last 6 years.
And I must say, it really does all look beautiful. But you mentioned that you traveled to a couple of countries and that, they really inspired him. We want to know which countries.
So I traveled to, my first country was Poland to look for material.
Ooh.
Very random. It was with my uncle as well, another uncle of mine who was working with me in the business. So that was my first official business trip, and it was very different because what my dad did was he put us together, and we have a very uncle son relationship type of a thing 6 years ago. Now it's like, okay, we talk about everything. It could be my personal life, professional life, morning to evening. He's like, anybody says he's my first wife or something at this point. So we're talking about everything. So that was a very smart move what my dad did, that he put us together and he let us build our own relationship because he is my dad's right hand. So it was a very interesting way to start that bond, start the journey together of this concept that we created.
Did you go towards the Asian side also? Or did
Of course. The thing is, you have to look at every aspect of it. Europe is one part, US is one part, the Asia side is one part. It's important to source your material, to find the right things to bring to the market so that you can understand. The idea is not for me to look at what I want. The idea is what the customer wants, what the client requires at this point. And after the COVID situation in 2020, You know, it was a very messy situation, but everybody wanted to change up their homes. Everybody wanted to, like, they got sick of it, you know?
Three months. Too much time on their hands.
Yeah, too much time, really. And then you see locals wanting to refurbish their homes. You see expats, you know, that finally took that plunge that, okay, I want to change up my house. I want to change up my tiles. I want to change up my bathroom. I'm sick of looking at this for the past 3 months, constantly for 24 hours. So that, you know, we opened at the right time. But of course, in a way, honestly, COVID kind of helped us. It helped build our business, unfortunately or fortunately.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. It's nice to hear that, because often what you hear about COVID is that it destroyed
a lot
of businesses. Yeah. So I'm glad that you were one of the lucky ones.
We really changed up our strategy. We used the right social media platforms at that time, like TikTok and Reels. Mm. We maximized that. Like, if you see businesses like Casa Milano, they're very fancy and high-end, but I also have to bring in the reality of it, making sure they see the product in reality and explaining it, and not just a fancy video. You go with the realism of that video. So short format videos really helped me in that situation. They brought Casa Milano, you know, on the grid in the UAE market. A lot of acceptance finally came through. It wasn't like that in the first 2-3 years, because people are like, who are you? It takes time for any business. No one will accept you in the first go. So it took a lot of time, and then that's why we're here.
You talked about minimalism in one of the articles I was reading about you. You talked about minimalism and being the products just not looking good, being like easy to use as well.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the science behind it? I know minimalism, it's very good. But when you go for luxury, I've seen people just fill up everything. They'll go for the best everything. They want the house to be have a sofa and a very nice, even in the washroom with the tiles, they'll just go exorbitant, I guess.
But so you have two kinds of vibes. Yeah. One is you have two types of customers. One is the minimalistic type, and one that just wants to fill up everything.
Yeah.
My desi khandan likes to fill up everything in the house. Most of them are like that, and they want it a little bit more gaudy, a little bit gold, a little bit of this, a little bit of pizzazz. My style is it's a mix of both. You have to understand where you need to add the gaudiness, the filling up the entire space, and somewhere you need to understand the minimalism part of it, because sometimes less is more.
Yeah,
you
I
have
agree
to
with you.
Like a lot of things, if you have too many things, it looks a lot cluttered. You have to maximize the space on that aspect of it. So that's why, you know, we bring in our kitchens. They're more very easy to use, very easy to place, and very useful. Like, you'll have a lot of storage space, which everybody needs right now in the kitchen for your cutlery, for your items, your ingredients. It's very important. But in order to not make it look cluttered, you need to make that item and the design of that very minimalistic, so that you have a clean space, but you know exactly where your other items are. So it's very important to have a mix of both, where you should be having a minimalism aspect of it, and where you can flourish.
No, I so agree with you. That's so classy. Sometimes less truly is more.
Yeah.
Now, a question that I have for you is that, you know, you mentioned that for the first 3 years, people were like, you know, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, what I want to know is, you know, what was a defining moment for your business? What was the turning point that where everything changed? You know, this is when Casa Milano really started to do well.
Well, we opened up more stores. Where you get more money invested.
Amazing.
In different locations. That was one of the main aspects of it as well in the first 3 years, because we had finally got a store in Deira, a store in Dubai, and a store in Abu Dhabi, because we got a lot of traction from the Abu Dhabi market, and we used social media for that. And the second thing I would say is our large-scale events, what we did. So this was to gather the attention of a designer, work with them simultaneously. So we built up this platform called Talking Walls. It was a beautiful platform that we can bring in young designers who, you know, are striving for recognition for their work, give them an opportunity, give them a 12 square meter space, utilize that. Like, you create the concept, we will bring it to reality. So we gave our products, we gave the theme for them to select. We created a journey for 8 months, and then we showcased it in Downtown Design in D3. Where these guys got to show their actual, not just a render concept, and brought it to reality. And that was in 4 days span, because exhibitions don't give you like, okay, 6 months to build.
Yeah.
They give you probably 5 days.
Yeah.
So we created a journey with them. They understood us as Casa Milano as well, and we made an impact in the design industry, in the community, because everybody visits this type of an exhibition because they want to create their homes, they want to see what's new in the market, what's artistic, and we created something that nobody else has ever done. And I want to hats off to my team for that, because I honestly did nothing. I was just sitting there and, you know, giving a speech.
Oh, wow. That's
What do you say is the USP of Casa Milano? Because obviously, you can't say that. Yeah.
Experience. You go in, you will be happy. You'll be welcomed with service. You can go around yourself. You don't need anybody. If you need somebody, my person will come to you. They'll serve you coffee. But the idea is, even if you don't buy anything, that's not a problem. I'm not looking for like, oh, please buy something. You go within a very happy experience you'll receive. And when you go out, you'll be able to tell other people that, oh, wow, I went to Casa Milano. I was very happy. And that's what I'm striving to achieve. I'm not really going for like, oh, I want to make 10x or 20x. Yeah, that's a great goal. It's part of the goals, but the idea is to build an experience for everybody to enjoy and build their dreams into reality with us.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And I think what you guys are also doing with that is it's word of mouth. I think when you have so many happy customers, they're only going to spread the word with each other and things are going to get better. But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So I noticed something. You have a very charismatic personality.
Thank you.
And I really do think that, you know, especially like an entrepreneur, a businessman, when he has such a personality, I think you can sell your business better. I think your business will do better. What would you say led to you having, you know, these skills, this confidence, you know, being able to communicate with people?
First, I think I'm a terrible salesman because I always...
Really?
I'm very terrible at this. Why? Because I'm going to tell them the truth. I'm not really trying to sell them. So like, somebody tells me like, oh, if I'm guiding somebody in the store, like, okay, take this or take that, or what should I buy? I'd be like, okay, don't buy this. This I didn't like anyway. You buy that instead. And I'll be very real with them about it. So maybe that's not the best quality of a salesman. You have to be selling it.
I think that is the best quality, because I actually used to work in sales, and that's what
to
do. I'd be like, no, that's bad. You should take that. And people would buy more. So
I guess it's a good strategy.
I think it's a good strategy.
I
always, my team's like, don't come. Don't come close. Like, just be away. But I honestly, my family, my friends, the ones that love me, they... Because of them, I think I have a very charismatic personality. I got pushed into, in a, you know, speaking on stage. I honestly do not like this part of the job at all. And it is what it is. And I'm lucky enough that I'm naturally good at it. And I like it as well sometimes.
Okay. Let's take your expert opinion on something. For example,
sure.
I bought a house. I'm building it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the UAE and overall the Middle East, right? That's your primary market.
True.
What is the best solution for tiles? Because you know the heat, and then now with more rains coming in and all that stuff, what is your recommendation? I know you deal with a lot of brands. You have all the big brands in your stores.
Mm-hmm.
What is the ideal? Like, again, you'll have to tell the truth, and I think you'll be happy
with it. So like, in terms of our own stores, you know, a little bit being flooded, by the way, in Sharjah and Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Luckily, not that much damage. Our tiles were fine, to be very honest. Our like ceiling was a messed up thing.
Oh.
So it really depends on where you are and what did you actually end up buying. I would always recommend to buy an Italian tile because they're the most, their strongest quality.
Nice.
And of course, you have 6mm option. They're also coming up with a 9mm option. So it's very important for that thickness. Otherwise, it can break, it can crack because, of course, water flooding. And you just have to use the right materials to clean as well.
Mm.
What I've always realized, the funny thing is what you've all, when you asked me in the recommendation, every brand, every product on the planet, you have to take care of it. If you don't take care of it, it will break. Like, I've come across many people asking me, like, oh, this broke, this is scratched, or, you know, this is messed up, or, like, sometimes it can be a quality issue as well.
Yeah.
100%. It's not like everybody's perfect. But if you don't take care of it,
obviously,
it'll mess up. I know a guy, not joking, this is a story I've told many people. He broke 33 tiles. And I paid for that.
What was he doing?
Because he used the wrong contractor and the wrong glue. I'm not joking. Like, my team knows this. He broke 33 specially ordered Italian tiles. Now, I'm like, okay, one breaks. Two breaks, fine.
Three,
it can
four
happen.
Is fine,
33? He actually broke 33. And I'm like, dude, that's not possible. So I realized his contractor was messy. And the idea is you have to be having the right contractor, the right glue. If you're spending that much money, you make sure you're, you know, the installation part is also right.
Yeah.
Product is fine, but if you don't install it properly, it'll be messy. Like, whatever you do, especially for tiles, because the you have sometimes large sizes, it's very difficult to maintain and, you know, manage to install that. So if you don't have the right installer who understands your product as well, it's not going to work.
I guess that's your next business venture, going into installation after Casa Milano. You'll be okay, we've
sell the product. Something, you know, you just made up a cool idea. Yeah. I could get into the installation part.
But heat-wise, sorry, we talked about water a lot. Heat-wise, best tiles, like which will stay cool even if it's like 100 degrees
outside.
I think
that would be more for the marble aspect of it. I think marble
so
aspect of it.
So towards marble for
Yes, for that. Because it really depends. You know, why some people choose tiles because it's more budget friendly. And of course, it'll give the same effect what a porcelain is looking at. Sorry, a marble is looking into. But it really depends. If you have the money for marble, you should go for marble.
Yeah.
If you have the, you know, the idea that you want to, you have a large space and you do not, you're not a fan of marble because you need to maintain marble.
Yeah, marble is very difficult.
You need to maintain marble. So that is why you go for porcelain. I was just speaking to somebody in India. He is also a distributor of a brand that I have here. He's like, people in India prefer marble because it's luxury. I was like, it's rich. Here I've realized people want marble, but there's a very specific niche for it. So that's why they would stick to floor, you know, parquet flooring or tiles. And that also, it depends on the design. If you're, you know, from the European side or colder countries across the world, you'll prefer flooring because you've grown up with that. So I would recommend it that way, you know, just to be in the colder section. But heat-wise, porcelain and marble should be fine. Just pick the right material and make sure it's the A-grade material. Not the B grade, that because sometimes productions have that. They are selling it off and it's very cheap rate. So if it's too good to be too price, just like double check with your contractor, somebody who's an interior designer, or somebody who can do your quality control. It's very important for that. It's like, you know, it's a process. First you buy the tile, you understand the pricing, make sure it's in the right space that you're utilizing it, if it's matching in your bathroom, you know, getting the installer. You know, you all have to have a synergy. The person who's selling it, the person who's buying it, the person who's installing it. Otherwise, it's going to be a mess.
And, you know, just for the last question of the day, what I really want to know is, you know, what defines Casa Milano? Like, you know, the company culture, everything, you, your employees, what do you think defines you guys and what keeps you going? And what is the kind of company culture that you're maintaining to really make the business successful?
Well, it's because my dad and my uncle, they've been very open about it with everybody else in the company as well. Like, you know, their doors open. So I live with that policy as well. My door is always open. We're very transparent with everybody. We have to be. And up until like a couple of years ago, I was the youngest in my own company. So that was the best part. Everybody's a lot older than me, a lot more experienced in life and in the business-wise. So I can only do what's best for them. I want to guide them and I want to be there for them whenever they have something professionally going on as well and personally. So like if I can support them the best way, the idea is to be very transparent with them because I'll always give a listening ear when it's possible. So I just keep it open. Talk to me freely and I will be freely free with you guys as well. And it's a synergy. So I always try to be like, yes, I am their boss sometimes, but I'm also very relaxed about it. Like, I will let things go that normally people don't, they're like, no, that's very bad.
One last tip for new entrepreneurs. You've been through the journey, you've started a business. One tip that you would give them, like, this is the
don't
top
give
tip.
Up. Don't give up. It takes, it's not like how they explain it on social media. Like, I started this and now I'm making 100,000 per month. That's not the truth at all. I'm sure everybody knows that. And it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of patience. Even despite having a very massive background, it's not like everybody will accept you. You have to keep at it, keep going, and sometimes forget your social life a bit. And it's important because if you forget your social life today, you will succeed in the future to have a beautiful life. So I would say just don't give up. It's important to keep striving to learn and adapt to new technologies. Like right now, AI is a big deal. I also want to see how it can help Casa Milano in their business. Yeah. It's very important.
That's going to be interesting to see.
Everybody's changing, you know, it's every, I think, 5 years or 10 years, it was like, oh, there was a massive disruption change. Now, I think every 2-3 years will happen, or even faster. Mm. So we need to be adapting to the times. And that's what I would, you know, always tell the young entrepreneurs as well. Pivot, if necessary.
Mm.
I think that's the best way I can help out.
Thank you so much. That was really beautiful.
Thank you for having me on this podcast.
Thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, you heard Mr. Azhar Sajjan. Casa Milano's doors are always open.
Yeah, just go for free coffee.
I'm not kidding. You can come for free coffee. That's exactly what I tell people as well.
Yeah. So this is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV, and please follow us on all our channels. Have a lovely day, everyone.